They found Yosef under the auspices of Jerusalem College for Adults.
Parshat HaShavua. I must admit, I believe that tonight's shiur is going to be, for me, a process of tshuva. Every year, I come to Parshas Noach, find it very, very difficult to understand Noach. And the fact, of course, is that Noach has been a difficult character to understand since the very beginning of time, since Noach. The famous Gemara in the Masechta Sanhedrin that Rashi quotes. On the very first pasuk, Gaelor told us, Noach, these are the generations of Noach. Noach is tzaddik. Noach was a righteous man. Tamim, he was complete. V'dorotav in his generations, Efe Elokim Italech Noach. Noach went with God. Says the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, my v'dorotav. Mahi v'dorotav, what does it mean in his generation? So there's an achlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Because v'dorotav can be a qualifying statement. It may very well be saying that, yes, he was a tzaddik. He was a tamim. Noach was a great man within the context of his generation. In his generation, he was a great man. Would Noach find himself in the generation of Avram? He'd be a fine Noah, but he would certainly pale into insignificance in the presence of an Avram. So that the Dorotav could be saying that there are limitations or qualifications to the greatness of Noah in his generation, surrounded by a world that had become depraved and was deteriorating, a world of immorality, a world of evil, a world gone mad. In that world, Noah was able to maintain a sense of dignity and goodness, and therefore that stood him in good stead. He is the one who's chosen by God to remain alive, and from him a new world is going to be built. So that it means, relatively speaking, relative to the people of his generation, he was a great tzaddik. You put him in another generation. Nobody would give him a second look. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, "B'dorosav, below b'dorotachayim." In his generation, was great, not in other generations. Resh Lakish Amar. Resh Lakish says, "B'dorotav." In his generation, to have had the strength, the courage, the determination, the will to remain a good individual surrounded by all of that evil, he was a powerhouse. That means if he is a tzaddik, while all of civilization and society around him stands in absolute opposition to all that he believes in, that takes strength. Do you know what would happen if the Noah would live in a generation where the street would be user-friendly, where the street would be in sync with the ideas that Noah himself believes in, where he could walk into the streets and find people who believe what he believes, who conduct themselves the way he conducts himself. In that kind of a generation, this Noah would have been able to achieve tremendous greatness. So what it means is, this is the Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. By the way, the Machlokes continues on for all generations. And my problem with Noach is, and every year I look at it, I don't know what it depends on. I don't know, is it something in my own personal experience? Is it something happening outside? But every time I look at Noach and I see a different face, a different dimension of Noach. What is it that I want to do tshuva for? So I'll tell you what I want to do tshuva for. It was a few years ago that reading through the parasha, I was struck by something that shook me to the core. So much happens in the Sedra. God appears to Noah and he tells him that I'm going to destroy the world. I want you to build an ark. gives him precise instructions, the length, the height, the width of the ark, who is to be brought into the ark. God communicates with him and communicates with him. 3, 4 times. In another 7 days, I'm going to bring the flood. On the day of the flood, he tells him, go into the table. He closes the door behind him. There's so much communication. Following the marble, he emerges. We're going to learn that part of the study. There is so much communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Noah. And yet, we don't hear a word out of Noah. Wasn't there one of the American presidents, which one was called silent? Cal Coolidge. Very good. Calvin Coolidge was silent Cal. This is silent Noah. Not a word out of him. And when I finally came face to face with the first word that he utters, I was shaken to the core. He comes out of the table. Some while later, he plants a vine. He's a very patient man. The vines grow. It probably takes a few years until he has grapes that are ready to make wine. And he makes wine of them. He drinks from the wine. He becomes drunk. And there he finds himself naked in the tent. He doesn't even know what's happening to him. Chum sees this. He tells his brothers, Shem and Yafet. They take a blanket and they walk backwards in order to cover Noah, but not to see the nakedness of their father. So the prophet says in chapter 9, Pasuk 23, Vayikach Shem v'Yafet et asim lo, Shem and Yafet took the cloak, Vayosim al Shem Shneim, and they placed it on the shoulders of the two of them, Vayelchu Achoranit, and they went backwards. They covered the nakedness of their father. They maintained their faces backwards, away from him. They didn't see the nakedness of their father. Noach 24, Noach woke up from his wine. Noach caught him and he knew what his youngest son had done to him. And he said, the first word that's uttered out of Noah's mouth is, Odor Canaan. Cursed is Canaan. Eved Avadim Yelech. He shall be a servant of servants to his brothers. Vayomer, and then he says another statement. Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, blessed is God, the God of Shem. Do you understand what troubled me when I came to these psukim and realized that this is the first thing that's said by Noah? I would have felt a little better if Noach would have blessed Shem and Yafet first, and then he would have said, Oro Canaan. Cursed is Canaan. But that's not what happens. The first word that comes out of this man's mouth is Oro. So I really went after, that year I went after Noach. That year I went. And here he remains silent all along. Does he lift his voice and plead on behalf of humanity? But when finally something hurts him personally, how can he talk? I better watch myself. I'm beginning to talk myself into it again, that what I said about him a few years ago was a real indication of his character. But I'm telling you in advance right now, this year is a good year for Noach. Tavshin Nun Zayin is a good year for by the way, next year we'll have to prepare something real good. It'll be Tavshin Nun Chet Tehei Shnat Noach. So we'll really have to prepare a good year. So I was upset. Man doesn't utter a word. And the first word that comes out of his mouth is awful. Cursed is Canaan. And then, of course, so many of the Mefarshim and Darshanim throughout time have made the comparison between Noah and Avram. Noah is the silent one, but Avram, it says at the beginning of Parashat Lech Lecha, that when God tells him, leave your birthplace, your father's house, your home, go leave it and go to the land that I will show you. So it says that he took his wife Sarai, he took Lot, the etanefesh asher osa b'choron, the souls that he made in Choron. Explains Rashi, what are the souls that he made in Haran? Sara Megayeret HaTanashim. Sara was the one who was converting the women. And Avram was Megayeret HaTanashim. Avram was the one who converted the men. Avram and Sara were communicating in many, many ways the great message, the discovery of Avram Avinu, the discovery of a one invisible God who is the creator of the world. They do a lot of talking. And of course, go compare Noah with Avram. When Avram is told that by God that Sodom and Amorah, Admot, Zeboim, those Rishoyim are going to be destroyed, he speaks out, and he speaks out in such a powerful manner. Hashofet kol haaretz lo yasa mishpat, the judge of the whole world is not going to do justice. That's pretty sharp talk to God. And on behalf of whom? On behalf of a bunch of Rishoyim. And then, of course, begins the classic, can't help but call it Middle East haggling. As I mentioned, what happens if there are going to be 50 righteous people in the city? Are you going to destroy them? 50 righteous people, you're going to destroy these cities? All right, no. 50 righteous people, I won't destroy. And then, of course, Avram says, what happens if from the 50, there are going to be 5 missing? You know, that's a really very smart way to do it. No, there's really 50. There's just 5 missing from the 50. You know, it's come up 50. All right, 45. And then 40 and 30 and 20 and 10. I mean, real negotiation, you understand. Real negotiation that goes on. Avram speaks out. Avram speaks up. Avram prays on behalf of those who show you. And from Noah, we don't hear a word. All right, I think that's really the gist of what I had said a few years ago. Noah speaks out when he's personally hurt. And what does he say? Ogur Canaan. Cursed is Canaan. I don't know, when you take a second look at it all, I begin to wonder, does anybody know whatever happened with all of the souls that Avram and Sarah had made in Haran? Have they left any footprints on the sands of time? How does that grab you? Have they left any mark? I have no idea where they disappeared to. I have no idea what happened to them. Avram had a servant who was his student, Eliezer. Do we know whatever happened to Eliezer? After all of the Torah that he studied from Avram, Avram had 2 children. I don't want to talk about the older one because you'll tell me that I'm becoming political. So I'm not going to talk about Ishmael. So it really means, after all of Avram's prayers and all of Avram's speaking and all of Avram's attempting to influence all of mankind, he wasn't really a great success in his own generation. His only success was with his son Yitzchak. In the longer view of things, of course, Avraham Avinu was a great success. On a number of occasions here, I've quoted Paul Johnson in his History of the Jews, a guy, a priest, who wrote a 600-page History of the Jews that's worthwhile reading, and he wants to prove only one thing, that the world was a different place because a man called Abraham walked the face of this earth 4,000 years ago. Do you understand how a guy takes a look at all of history? And in his epilogue, he says that it's a toss-up. It's not certain. Would men later on have discovered what Avram did if there wouldn't have been an Avram? Maybe yes, maybe not. But the fact is that Avram, and he says probably not, the fact is that Avram was the one who sent a great message to the world, and ultimately the message caught on. But you know how it caught on? By virtue of the fact that he had a Yitzhak, and Yitzhak had 2 children. Didn't succeed terribly well with one, succeeded with the other. Yaakov succeeded ultimately with all of his children. And then came a Klal Yisrael, and the Klal Yisrael became the bearers of the message that God is one. So in the final analysis, if you want to sum up, Avram was not such a great success in his own time. Noah, on the other hand, had 3 children. 3 children. Shame, success story. Avram comes from Shame. Yefet wasn't the big Kamakachem, but Greece
and Greek philosophers came from Yefet. So Yefet wasn't a Talmud Chacham, but he went to college, you understand, you know, he got a degree. There's a certain beauty to Yefet. There was a beauty to Yefet. He lost one. Chacham obviously was not a great success story. The fact is, two out of three is very good. There are some of us, have the unique blessing that all the kids turn out all right. That's after all the aggravation and all of the white hair. It doesn't happen in most cases. Life is a life of struggle. And there are problems. That's the way it is. Noah didn't succeed and Abraham didn't succeed. So therefore, maybe I'm a little less impressed now with all of the great efforts of Avram. I don't want to denigrate Avram, God forbid. But when we make the comparison between Noah and Avram, it's not necessarily so that Noah comes out terribly lacking. All right, but now what we have to talk about is, what's this year's discovery? I think that this year I've discovered a completely different side to Noah, and that's what I want to talk about. In the parasha, let's begin with chapter 8, pasuk 15 at Revi. Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemor. Elokim spoke to Noach, so say. Same in Hateva. Go out of the ark. Ata v'ishtecha, you and your wife, uvanecha and your sons, unishevanecha itach, and your sons' wives, your daughters-in-law with you. Kolachai asher itach, all of the beasts that are with you, mikol basar, all flesh, v'of, uvabehema, fowl and animal, v'chol ademes haromeis alorets, and everything that creeps upon the face of this earth, haitzei itach, take out with you, v'shar tubarets, let them go and creep over the world, uforu v'rov v'alorets, and they should be fruitful and multiply. Vayetze Noach, Uvanov Noach and his sons, Beishto and his wife, Unishe Banov Ito and the wives of his sons with him. Two questions. Number one, why does Noah have to be told by God, go out of the ark? Same in Hateva. Was going into the ark some kind of a mitzvah? And that he can't go out until he's granted permission. What are you going to tell me? He doesn't know whether the earth is ready to receive him. That can't be, because you know what happened just before? He had sent out the raven, and the raven came back and said, nevermore. And then he sent out the dove once, and sent out the dove twice. And finally the dove came back holding an olive leaf in her mouth. Most probably the last time that a dove with an olive leaf was able to represent and be symbolic of peace, because there was nobody on the face of the earth to make any tzachut. Since that, the poor dove is in terrible trouble. He knows that the earth is dry. It said it in the pasuk before, two pasukim before. It said, Charvu hamayim al haaretz. The water had become dried up upon the face of the earth. And Noach removed the cover of the ark by Yaron, and he saw with his own eyes. The earth is dry. So why doesn't he go out? Why does he have to be told by God? And listen to the pasuk. Doesn't the pasuk sound like a classic mitzvah, like we have throughout Torah, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lema? Hashem spoke to Moshe so saying, Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lema. Elokim speaks to Noach. Big mitzvah, tzeim at ha-teva. Why doesn't he go out of the tape on his own? Then watch. That command, there is something very, very significant. Listen to what God tells him. In Pasuk 16, same in Atefa, Ata, the Ishtacha, you and your wife, Uvanecha, your children, Unesheibanecha, and the wives of your children. That's not the way they went into the Tefa. They went into the Tefa, it was men separately and women separately. So the Rebbeinu was sending a message to Noach that there cannot be any intimate relations during the period of the Teva while a world is being destroyed. Not the time for it. Earlier on in the parasha, it says,
in chapter 7. Chapter 7. There are a number of psukim. One is chapter 7, pasuk Zion, pasuk 7. Vayavol Noach uvanav, Noach and his sons, the ishto unishevanav ito, and his wife and the wives of his sons came with him into the ark. You see how they come in? Men separately and women separately. Take a look at pasuk 13 in chapter 7. Be'etzem hayom hazeh, on that day itself, as the rain came down, bo Noach v'shem v'chom v'yefet b'nei Noach. Ve'eshet Noach u'shloshet v'shem banav itam al ha'tevet. You see how the pasuk divides them? So clearly divided. Noach, Shem, Chom, and Yafet came into the teva, and the wife of Noach and his three daughters-in-law came in, because they are being told that they are not committed to one another during the period that they are at the table. Let's go back to the psukim that we were learning now. What's the God's command to Noach? Same in Hateva, go out of the teva. How is he supposed to go out of the teva? Ato v'ishtecha, you and your wife, uvanecha unishevanecha yitach, your sons and their wives with them. Pasuk 18, vayetze Noach. Noach went out. How did he go out? Noach uvanav, Noach and his sons, v'ishto unishevanav yitach, his wife, and the daughters-in-law with him. Do you know how he comes out of the teva? Not mixed, separate. Do you know what's happening over here? Noach is defying God. He's been told, go out ato v'ishtecha, bonecho unishevanecha yitach. That's not what he does. He is defying God. He's throwing it in God's face, so I'm not going to do it. By the way, I don't know how long Noah was in the teva after he had already taken off the cover and he saw that the earth was dry. I don't know how long he's sitting in the teva until God appears to him and tells him, same in HaTeva, go out of the teva. What's he waiting for? What is he waiting for? Do you know what I believe is troubling Noah? Noah doesn't want to step out onto a cemetery. All of mankind is buried beneath his feet. People don't go walking around on graveyards. By Noah waiting in the ark, do you know what he's doing? He's confronting God. I don't want to walk out into a world that you turned into an absolute graveyard. You destroyed all of mankind. I don't want to go. If you force me to go, if you command me to go, I will do it. And even after God commands Noah, he'll go out of the teva, but he's not going to fulfill the second part of the puzzle. You tell me, I and my wife, my children and their wives, no, I'm not going to do it. There may be other reasons why Noah doesn't want to go out of the ark. One of them may very well be something that is a condition that our generation knows of. Our generation knows of the terrible guilt that is borne by the survivor. The person's whole family is destroyed in Auschwitz-Birkenau, and the one who comes out finally emerges alive. The one who emerges alive is wrecked with guilt for a lifetime. Why did I survive? It's not logical. It's not rational. Feelings don't have to be rational or logical. But it's a fact that exists. Why was I spared? And all of them went to their horrible deaths. Noah is now the survivor. All of mankind is buried beneath his feet. Is it possible that Noah is also suffering from another form of guilt?
is it possible that he feels now, maybe there was more that I could have done beforehand? You know, we're all masters in the art of guilt. We're all masters. I tell you, what we can feel ourselves guilty of, I mean, we are creative in our guilt. But Noah maybe has good reason. He's a survivor. The world is a cemetery. Maybe he could have done more. And therefore, he's not going out of the ark. And he's not going to have children. And his children are not going to have children. He's not only confronting God, he's not only communicating with God, he is defying him. Is he the only one who defies God in this manner? Somebody else. Amram divorces his wife Yocheved. Why does he divorce Yocheved? Because when Pharaoh decrees that Jewish children are going to be thrown into the Nile, I don't plan on having children. But he's doing more than that. Of course, we know that his daughter comes to him and he says, Tata, your decree is worse than the decree of Paro. Paro's decree was only against males. Your decree is against males and females. So what? Amram, who is the god of Hador, is not as smart as Miriam. He doesn't know what Miriam is going to tell him. So what was it that Amram had in mind? Do you know what Amram had in mind? Amram was challenging and defying God. It's a two-way street. There's a covenant between Klal Yisrael and God. You want to have a people to give Torah to? Do you want a people who throughout history are going to bear the message that God is one? We have you over a barrel. Rabbein Yisrael, we have you where we want you. If you don't stop this, if you don't save your people, we're simply not going to have children. And the people of Israel will disappear from the face of this earth. And all of your plans will become nothing. Amram is challenging God. And it's a powerful challenge. What is it that Miriam tells her father? Amram's plan can only work if all of Israel joins in. If all of Israel say, Rabbeinu Shalom, no Jewish children are going to be born until such time that your mercy and your compassion is demonstrated towards your people. We'd have him over, Mamash over about. The only thing is, Miriam is really telling her father that it may not be working throughout, and you know what's going to happen if it doesn't work. It means that tzaddikim, the good people, are not going to have children, but those who are not that strong and those who are of the lower classes of Klal Yisrael are going to have children. So what kind of a Klal Yisrael is it going to look like? Maybe it's a bad example, but I'll give you the example. There is a strong possibility that the Catholic Church nearly celebrated itself out of existence, because the intelligentsia, the intellectuals of the Catholic Church, were the priesthood, but the priests have to be celibate. What does that mean? That the outstanding IQs of the Catholic world, those who made up the most significant part of the gene pool of the Catholic world, were simply not procreating. So what's going to block? What's going to remain? Fortunately or unfortunately, they weren't such tzaddikim. So, lo and behold, there are still some good IQs in the Catholic world, because priests simply didn't keep the vows of celibacy. But if they would have, they would have turned the Catholic world into a world without leadership. All the brains would have been gone. All the brains would have been gone. Amram is defying God. He's challenging him. He's confronting. And I want to use one more word. He's communicating. And I think this is the point that I want to make. There are different kinds of communication. There are people who communicate ideas through poetry. There are those who communicate through prose. Those who communicate through art and those who communicate through music. Avraham Avinu is a communicator verbally. Do you know what Noach is? He communicates in a powerful way, non-verbally.
Noach doesn't have to open up his mouth, but he's sending messages.
When I said that the first thing that Noah said was Aror, I'm not ready to accept that now. I'm going to show you that Noah has been communicating in powerful manner throughout. It's not silent, Noah.
Except that he communicates in a different way. He communicates in the way that Amram is communicating. The Bnei Shalom, Noah's children. By the way, the Gemara says that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, there were the Avele Tzion, the ones who mourned for Tzion. And they said, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, in the day that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, Dinhu, do you know what the right thing is? That we should decree about ourselves not to eat meat, not to drink wine, not to marry, not to have children. V'zaro shel Avraham Avinu kol amei eleihem. And the seed of Avraham Avinu will simply disappear by itself. Is that what they really had in mind? Or what they really had in mind was, Rabbeinu Shalom, if being a Jew means persecution, death, and destruction, if it means that the great spiritual center of the Beis HaMikdash is gone, and their lives were so inextricably intertwined with that Har HaBayit, and that Beit HaMikdash, they could not see a Jewish people continuing to exist without the Beit HaMikdash. So they say, if so, the Bnei Shalom, we have a weapon. We have a weapon at our disposal as well. And our weapon is to leave you without a Klal Yisrael. And then where will you be? Noach walks out of the Teva. Do you know how? Noach walks out of the Teva with his three sons. And his wife walks out with her three daughters-in-law. And they are sending a powerful message to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Sorry. Do you know how strong this statement is? This silent, non-verbal statement. It struck me. Take a look at, and for lack of better words, there's going to be a flood of words coming from the Rabbeinu Shalom, a veritable torrent of words, an outpouring. You know the marble flood, the Rabbeinu Shalom begins to communicate. It's unbelievable. You have to watch. Noach makes a carbon. I'll just run through the psukim in chapter 8. Vayorach Hashem, Pasuk 21, Vayorach Hashem et Reach HaMichoach, and the Rabbeinu Shalom smelled the scent of the carbon. Vayomer Hashem Alivo, and God said, usually it's translated, Vayomer Hashem Alivo, God said to himself, Lo osif lekalel od et ha'adama, I'm no longer going to curse the earth, Pavur ha'adam, because of man. Ki yetzer lev ha'adam rami nudov, because the inclination of the heart of man is evil from his youth. V'lo osif od l'hakotet kol chayim, I'm not going to destroy all life as I have done. One can also interpret, and I believe I saw that Ksav HaKabbalah says it, Vayomer Hashem Alibo, Hashem speaks to the heart of Noah. Do you know what's going to happen now? The Rabbeinu Shalom has heard Noah's non-verbal communication. Communication received. And do you know what the Rabbeinu Shalom is now going to begin on? He's going to begin a process of speaking to the heart of Noah. He wants to rebuild his relationship with him. He wants to assure Noah. He wants to promise Noah. Do you know what's going to happen? Just imagine, I'm telling you, this is the way I see it. I know I have a fertile imagination, but I'm telling you, this is the way I see it. Because take a look. The Rebbe speaks to him and says, I will no longer destroy all of mankind. I'm not going to do it again. Pasuk 22, for the rest of time, all of the seasons, there will be the zera and kotzer, there will be the planting and the harvesting, kor v'chom, cold and hot, kayitz v'choref, summer and winter, yom v'layla, day and night, will never end. Isn't that a tremendous promise? What a promise! What would we expect at this point? What would we expect? That Noah would relent? It's all over, yes, we're going to start having children. Do you know how I imagine the scene? Noah stands there poker-faced, unmoved, unimpressed. It wasn't enough. So you know what the Rebbeinu has to do? After a promise, the next thing is going to be by Yevarech, Elet Kimet Noach Ved Bonav, and the Rebbeinu Shem now blesses Noach and his sons, and he says to them, Prudavu, Milu, Tarets, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. By the way, I believe with this we can answer a question that's asked by the Mepharshim. There was a mitzvah, Prudavu, that was given to Adam. Why does the mitzvah have to be repeated to Noach? Noach is one of the children of Adam. I mean, every generation of Jews have to be given Torah all over again. Why does he have to be told, Prudavu? Be fruitful and multiply. The way I'm saying it, you know what I'm saying? He says, no, I'm not going to fulfill the mitzvah. I'm not going to do it. So first the Rebbeinu begins by a command. He sees that a command is not going to move Noah. So he begins to speak to Noah's heart. Speaking to Noah's heart is not enough. You know what Noah wants? Noah wants a bracha. So the Rebbeinu gives him the bracha, Prudavu. And in Pasuk 4, he tells him, Pasuk 2, your fear is going to be upon all of the animals of the field. In Pasuk 7, and again the Rebbeinu tells him, V'atem Prudavu, after all of these promises, after everything I've told you, and God gives him a plan, a blueprint for all of mankind. He gives him the seven Noachide mitzvahs. V'atem again, he repeats, Prudavu, be fruitful and multiply, shear through the earth, swamp through the land, Uravuba. And multiply that. Now, should be over, right? Should be over. It's not over. Because it seems that the Rebbeinu has to speak again. There's been no communication, but he speaks again. Because the Rebbeinu understands, no, even this is not enough. Noach derives a hard bargain. He drives a harder bargain than Abraham does for Sodom and Gomorrah. Noah is not going to take no for an answer. Yes, you've promised me that the seasons are going to continue. You will never destroy the world again. You've given us a bracha. Not enough. You know what he wants? He wants a covenant. And, you know, a real covenant. And not only he wants a covenant, he's going to keep holding out until God makes a sign for that covenant, the rainbow. And it's only after, Mamish, it's literally a flood, a torrent, and an outpouring of God's talking. Why does it keep talking? Again and again and again. You know why? Because Noah has remained in his silent defiance. Silent confrontation can be infinitely more powerful. That's the only way to explain. You know, all of this could have been said in a few psukim. It didn't have to be another speech and another speech. A vayedaber Elokim, a vayomer Elokim, vayomer Hashem Elibo, pru urvu, shir tzu v'aretz, revuba, and then the Rebbeinu Shem, that's finished. Vayomer Elokim al Noach v'al bonavit aleima. Now the Rebbeinu Shem speaks to Noach and his son, saying, v'ani hinini mekim et briti etchem. I'm making it a real treaty, a real covenant. And with your children afterwards. It is possible. Now that I read the pasuk, every time I read the pasuk, I see something different. I haven't noticed this before. Maybe Noah is not ready to give in because the covenant has only been between Noah and God, and Noah's children and God. What about future generations? Now he's going to make a covenant with Zarachem Achrechem, your children who are after you, that Kol Nefesh Achaya, he's now going to make a covenant with all of them. Pasuk 11, I'm going to fulfill it, I'm going to keep it.
And another promise, V'lo yikare kol basar mimei mabul, all flesh will not be destroyed again from the waters of the mabul. V'lo yiyod mabul l'shachet ha'aretz, there will never be a mabul again. By the way, with all of the promises that God made before, He never said there wouldn't be another mabul. Now He finally says, no more mabul, never again. Still not enough. Still no reaction and response from Noah. So therefore, in Pasuk 12, Vayomer Elokim, Elokim said, Zot ot habrit. To the covenant, to the treaty, I'm going to make an oath brit. And then we have the whole story with the covenant and the keshet, the rainbow. In Pasuk 17, Vayomer Elokim El Noah, Elokim says to Noah, Zot ot habrit asher hakimoti beini uvein kol basar asher al haaretz. This is the covenant and this is the sign between myself and every living being on the face of this earth. Can you imagine what the Rebbeinu Shem has gone through now? All in response to the silent defiance of Noah. Look what Noah has accomplished. Look what promises, guarantees, blessings, the way in which God speaks El Lipo to the heart. Fact is, does Noah first become a non-verbal communicator after the mabul? No. He is a non-verbal communicator even before. Interestingly enough, I have a feeling that his non-verbal communication is only with God, not with man. Reichen tells him, I'm going to bring a mabul in another 120 years. For 120 years, he's building a teva. Chazal say Rashi brings it. People are asking him, what are you building this thing for? And he communicates with people and he tells them, yes, you know, the Rebbeinu Shem has told me that in 120 years he's going to destroy the whole world. He's going to destroy the whole world. And watch back earlier at the beginning of the Seder, chapter 7 again. 7:7, we learned the Pasuk before. Let's take a look at the Pasuk again. Vayovo Noach uvonav v'ishto. Noach and his sons and his wife and the wives of the sons came with him into the teva. This is really following the command in Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk 1 of chapter 7. Vayomer Hashem l'Noach. God said to Noach, Bo atovah kol beis kol ha'teva, you and your whole family come into the ark. Ki otcha ra'iti tzadik l'fanai batar hazeh, because I've seen you as a tzadik before me in this generation. Let's ask the question, why does he have to be told to come into the ark? What's he been building the ark for 120 years? What for? So it should go floating off? Why does there have to be a mitzvah, boel ha-teva, go into the teva? And when he finally does come into the teva, that pasuk 7:7 again, he comes into the teva, so what do you think? He comes into the teva because God commanded him to come into the teva? No. In the pasuk before, pasuk 5, two psukim earlier, Vayas Noach kichol asher tzivo Hashem, Noach did everything that God commanded him. Says Rashi, Zed biyato lateva, that is his coming. Lateva, I want to translate this Rashi in a very special way. La teva does not mean that he came into the ark. It's not possible to say that it means he did what God commanded him. He came into the ark. You know what biato la teva means? That he came to the ark and he stood outside. How do I know that's so? Because there's another Rashi on this 7:7 that we're talking about. Do you know why he went into the ark? Because the waters of the mabul were already swirling around him. Says Rashi, Noach miktane amona haya. Noach was... I don't have a good translation for this, but I'll translate it literally. Noach also miktane amona. He was a small believer. What does it mean, a small believer? Into the ark, achedachku amayim, until the waters pushed him in. You hear what Rashi is saying? Take a look at this again. Noach was miketane amon, small believer. Mam in vain amon. He believed and he didn't believe that the mabul was going to come. So the only reason why he goes in is because the waters have pushed him in. Do you know what that means? The rain begins.
Where's Noach and his house? Where are Noach and all the members of his family? They're standing outside the ark. And they're drenched. And it's raining. And Noach still doesn't go in. Do you know when he goes in? He goes in only when, I would imagine, maybe literally and figuratively, we can say, Bo Mayim Ad Nofesh. When the waters, it was a matter of, he wasn't going to live otherwise. Fact is, there's a pasuk later, pasuk 17, V'haboim zocharin in kevim mikol bozor bo, kashet siva oto alakim, v'yizgor Hashem ba'ado, God closed the door behind him. I have a feeling that the Rebbe Yisrael is closing the door behind Noah, so Noah shouldn't jump ship. Why is Noah standing outside of the ark while the rain is coming down? Because he's mamin ve'eino mamin. What do you mean he believes and he doesn't believe? What does it mean he's ketanei amono? You know what the Rashi means? Noach can't believe that God is really going to go through with it. He can't believe that God is going to destroy the world. Ketanei amono over here is complimentary of Noach. He can't believe. His mind and his heart are incapable of imagining that the Rebbeinu Shalom, who's Rachum V'Chanun, Erech HaPayim, he's merciful, he's compassionate, he's good, you're going to destroy all of mankind, I can't believe it. You're scaring them. And at the last minute, it's all going to change. Rashi does indeed say, when the Pasuk says, Vayihi HaGeshem, the Pasuk 12, it said, Vayihi HaGeshem Al Ha'aretz, Arboim Yom V'Arboim Laila, the Geshem was upon the earth, Pasuk 12, and then in 17 it says, Vayihi HaMabul Arboim Yom Al Ha'aretz. First it was Geshem, and then it became Mabul. When the rains came down, they came down as Gishmei Brocha. And God was hoping that man would do tshuva, and he meant that man would do tshuva, so they would be rains of blessing. But they didn't. So then the rains became Mabul. But Noach is standing outside of the Teva, incredulous, disbelief. He's simply unwilling to accept that God is going to destroy his entire world. Do you know what Noach is doing? He's confronting God. He's defying God. You told me to go into the Teva? I'm not going into the Teva. I'm only going to go into that Teva when I am forced. I'm left with no choice. Of my own free will? You told me to build a Teva? Sure, I'll build a Teva. I spent 120 years building it. I built it. I tried to pass the message on to the rest of mankind. You want me to go into the Teva? You're going to have to force me into the Teva. Your waters will have to force me into the Teva. So what I think what I'm really saying is that there are different kinds of communication. Not everybody has to necessarily communicate verbally. It doesn't have to be words. There are so many different ways in which we can make our thoughts and our ideas and our feelings known to others. I mean, I think that we're all, I don't know whether we're masters at it, but we all have our own ways of communicating. I don't know, my wife always tells me, you can see everything written on my face. People communicate just with their facial expressions. With their facial expressions. So I'm no longer ready to accept that Noach stands passively by. And I remember as a child, they always used to describe Noach as a tzaddik in pelts. You know what a tzaddik in pelts is? A tzaddik in pelts is a tzaddik who's wearing a big fur coat. You understand? So everybody else is cold. You understand? The poor are walking around in tattered clothing, but he's good and warm in his fur coat. In other words, the one who's concerned only about himself and is not concerned about anybody else. I don't know. I'm not ready to say that that's what Noach was. Could Noach have done more?
sure he could have done more.
By the way, what is fascinating, of course, is the machloket of whether we look at Noach in a complimentary way. Or do we discredit him? Do we look at him l'shevach, praise, or deny shamefully, as we said at the beginning of the machloket, Rav Yochanan and Rav Shlakish? It may very well go back to, certainly we can understand Rav Shlakish. Rav Shlakish was a gladiator. Rav Shlakish was a highwayman. Rav Shlakish was a bad man until he met up with Rav Yochanan. And Rav Yochanan was Marzeh Rav Shlakish in Tshuva to the point that Rav Shlakish became the great Talmud Chacham and the antagonist of Rav Yochanan. It's hardly a page in Talmud where you don't have Rav Yochanan and Rav Shlakish. Not only that, they became Mishpucha. He gave his sister in marriage to Rav Shlakish. So they became brothers-in-law. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that everybody's looking for a gladiator for his sister. But obviously, Rav Shlakish was able to... Rav Shlakish was better able to understand something that Rav Yochanan couldn't understand. Maybe in modern parlance, it's the difference between the FFB and the BT. The one who's frum from birth and the one who's a Baal Tshuva. The one who is frum from birth has very little idea, has absolutely no way of understanding the struggle. The struggle, the courage, the determination, the ups and the downs, the successes and the failures, the peaks and the valleys that a Baal Tshuva goes through. Struggle. Real struggle. Resh Lakish understood real struggle. Resh Lakish understood real struggle because it was a real part of his own life. And therefore he understood what it meant for Noah to maintain his dignity and his piety and his righteousness in a world that had become that evil. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, was not privy to these kinds of struggles. Therefore, while Rish Lakish is able to see the good side of Noach, Rabbi Yochanan has difficulty in seeing that. In a sense, it reminds me, it recalls something I saw the Salavation that Tzadik Levracha wrote. The Rambam, in his introduction to Pirkei Avot, which is called the Shemona Prophet, the eight chapters, and you can imagine why it's called the eight chapters, because there are eight chapters. In the Shemona Prophet, the Rambam differentiates between two types. One type is the Tzadik HaMe'uleh. The Tzadik HaMe'uleh is the absolutely righteous person, the one for whom righteousness and goodness and kindness and benevolence is within his nature. It's just from birth he has it. And then there is the person who, by its virtuous personality, is open to temptation, and life is always a struggle. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes you really do mitzvahs for a longer period of time, then you start doing a bunch of avedos, and you're dragged and tossed and turned between Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. What a battle. One is called the Tzadik HaMe'uleh, the absolute Tzadik, and the other one is called Kovashis Yitzchak, the one who conquers his will, has to work on himself. It's a lifetime of struggle. These two types, the Rav said, were Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef says Rashi, who Yosef? He is Yosef. This Yosef was the same, maintained his balance and his equilibrium in the house of his father, in the house of Potiphar, when he's in jail, when he's incarcerated, when he's the second in command. There is a balance and an equilibrium and a strength. Therefore, he's called Yosef HaTzadik. He is able to withstand the temptations of the wife of Potiphar. Yehuda, on the other hand, is the one who falls prey to the temptations of a woman on the side of the road. Thank God he did. Without that, there would be no David HaMelech and no Mashiach. But he didn't know that. Yehuda's life is a life of struggle. Said the Rav, a king can only come from Yehuda, not from Yosef. Because Yehuda, whose life is struggle, can understand the struggles of his subjects.
Can better understand what's going on in their lives. Their suffering, their difficulties, their problems. Because he experiences it in his own personality, in his own character. Yosef is too much of a tzaddik. He's unable to really get down there and feel for the man in the street. So Malchus' kingdom is going to go to Yehuda. Resh Lakish understands Noach. Rabbi Yochanan judges Noach on a completely different level. He expects more of Noach. So let's say, I know there is one problem that remains at the end of this year. Every time I speak about what Noach is all about, I come down very hard on one side. So then you wonder, what does the other side hold? Not important. Let's wait till next year. Let's wait till next year. Or 2 years. Yeah, because next year we decided is Tavshin Nun Ches, right? So we're going to have to find another positive aspect of Noach's character. And then we'll worry about that afterwards. We'll worry about it afterwards. But that's it. I feel very strongly that Noach does communicate his will throughout. And not only does he communicate his will, he confronts God. And God responds in such awesome manner to the confrontation of Noach. The commands, the blessings, the talking, the commitment, the covenant, the keshet of the anon, all of this just flows from God in response to the silent but strong confrontation and communication of Noach. That's it.